Hi guys, you're listening to The Last Out with Jack and Joe. Today we're doing a bit of a mixture of the MMA Hour and Everyday Hour. It'll be predominantly MMA, but I've been a little bit sick over the last week. I believe it was Joe that got me sick. We call it the Joe Rona or the Joe Corona.
Joe Corona.
Joe Corona. Well, I clearly don't have coronavirus, clearly. I was just a bit sick and I had some flu-y kind of symptoms, but... I'm much better now. I'm not in bed anymore. I was in bed a lot. I just felt really tired. How was your day, Joe?
Mine's going pretty well. I mean, it's good that we're back in filming these podcasts right now because there is so much to talk about.
Oh, it's been crazy this week. It would have been weird if we didn't do a podcast because we would have missed out on so much content.
Because right now is literally the best time to talk about.
Exactly. Well, we didn't get to talk about Sunday's fights, so do you want to start us off?
Yeah, that's right, may as well. The card was great. It was the Robert Whittaker versus Darren Till fight card on Fight Island. Mm-hmm. You know, there were some pretty good fights, but you know what I believe? Even though the main event was a really, really good fight. It went the distance, and I didn't expect it to go the distance, especially since it was Till's second fight middleweight. But what everyone is talking about right now is this guy, Khamzat Chimaev.
I have no idea how you pronounce his name.
But he's a fighter in welterweight. And
is it Chimaev or Kimaev?
Chimaev.
We'll have to find out how to properly pronounce his name and that. Well, yeah, everyone's going, well, we posted a meme about him on it's Dana White going, and Khamzat, smash.
Well, he's a welterweight. He's only won 8 times so far.
Mm.
And he took the fight literally after 10 days of his previous fight when he fought on the Calvin Kattar card. And
he says he's willing to fight again for... 252, I think, as well.
Oh, yeah. He's an insane fighter. And the thing is...
He's a beast.
Everyone's talking about him. Everyone's literally talking about him. And he's new. He's a rising prospect. But here's the thing. He's Swedish, but he looks like he's a relative to Khabib.
Yeah.
He looks like he's a bigger Khabib, really.
He just says, I want to smash these guys. They're scary like that. I think it was getting a little bit... He was trying to make himself very known. He's 100% known now.
Yeah.
But he started, you know, calling out the likes of like Conor McGregor and saying, you know, he's gonna be the pound for pound king after Khabib and things like that. Honestly, he's a scary guy because we watched some of his previous fights. Scary dude.
We even like
power.
He's got power.
There was I was talking to Joe and I was saying, hey. He's a fucking badass because he went in, he was smashing the guy. He's in a dominant position. He's got the guy's back. He's got the hooks in, right? And he gets one arm around his throat and he just goes like this, puts his mouth guard back in, takes a second, like a pause, and then sinks in the rear naked choke, pulls him back.
He was so relaxed. He did it with such grace too.
I know, but you can tell he'd been doing it at a very young age.
Mm-hmm.
You can tell that that's what he's been... I'm pretty sure he did say that he's been doing martial arts since he was, like, I don't know, 5, 8, something like that. So, at a very young age.
I honestly believe he's a potential threat to the welterweight division.
I said either division. On our Instagram, I said either division. He's scary.
He's
scary. Welterweight, it looks like welterweight is the one for him. He said he was... I think he was also calling out Cowboy Cerrone and saying, I love Cowboy and I'd love to fight him. Cowboy's no slouch. He has some of the most experience ever in the octagon at all.
He's probably like, hold my buzz wise right now. Yeah, I'm going to go fight.
I'm going to take this guy out. But he's a scary guy.
That would be a good fight.
I reckon.
I could see that maybe potentially happening because if you think about it, even though Khamzat's new, he hasn't really fought any... he hasn't really fought any big names.
I'm gonna kick your camera.
Yeah, you keep the camera. That's all good. So even though he's new to the UFC, he's only had 2 fights so far in the UFC, and he literally could. I think it's time maybe he fights a little bit of a bigger name, you know. And Cowboy Cerrone's no guy to turn it down. But the thing is, I know it'll be an interesting fight because Khamzat's fights don't go beyond the second round.
I said he's never been in third round.
Mm-hmm.
It's always been first or second round KO or submission. It's never been any. He's, to be fair, he's 8-0, right? But any of his fights, it's never gone to a third round ever.
Yeah, he's a hype train, and I hopefully he keeps going with that.
Scary guy.
Scary guy.
There was one highlight when he got this. It was kind of like a very. It wasn't quite an uppercut, but he was working his way just in someone's guard,
mm-hmm.
on the inside, and he just put that guy's lights out. So he's got power. It's scary. Mm-hmm. It's scary. He's definitely a huge power puncher in that division, in the welterweight division.
Oh, for sure. For sure. And also on the card, basically, just before the main event, we had a bit of a controversial moment.
That was with Herb Dean. Mm-hmm. That was with Herb Dean. I was talking to you off air, and I didn't feel it warranted Dan Hardy to get up and, the reason why I felt that he probably was annoyed was, I believe he personally knows the kid that, you know, got knocked out.
Mm-hmm.
I believe he knew him. So, I understand where he's coming from. He's an ex-fighter himself.
Well, the reason why it basically was controversial was because of the fact that, you know, he had already knocked him out, basically. He went back.
Yeah.
And he had his hands and his legs in the air. Now, obviously, we can argue all day about...
Was he doing some form of protecting himself intelligently? But you can just see on his face, he wasn't there.
Yeah.
He wasn't there. It was just kind of reactionary kind of
mm-hmm.
stuff when you're a bit out of it.
But Herb Dean is probably one of the gold standard or when it comes to
MMA referee. He's one of the top two. I mean, some of the best refs, I think the most notable ones is either...
Big John McCarthy,
but he's retired now.
Yes.
Oh, no, he works for Bellator.
Yeah.
Oh, no, but he doesn't ref. I think he does the commentary.
Oh, of course.
Bellator. But... And the other one is Herb Dean.
Yeah.
The other one's Herb Dean. And Herb Dean is one of the best. And, you feel safe when that guy is there. You know, he's not going to be 100. Like, he wasn't really in a win. It wasn't really a win situation for Herb. Because if he stopped it a second too early, then, you know, they're going to say, oh, you stopped it too early. But then when he gave him the chance to actually do it, then they said, oh, no, it was too late. You could have injured it. It wasn't an easy choice for Herb anyway, and I think I'm glad Herb didn't backtrack.
Mm-hmm.
I'm happy he didn't backtrack, and he just went, "Hey, I thought it was the right call, and I still think it was the right call."
I mean, because he's refereed so many fights, and you know, it's
ex-fighter himself.
Yeah, and it's occasional to have a slip up here and there. But in terms of, like, slip-ups, or even if you can argue whether or not it was a late stoppage or mistakes go, there are a lot worse ones out there. To me, I was like, okay, maybe you did argue a late stoppage.
The one I thought was terrible was the Jose Aldo.
There we go.
First PD on.
There you go.
That's when we were literally yelling, stop the fight.
Yeah. Because when you're literally crouching over, putting your hands covering your entire face, you're on your knees like you're in the bottom of a prayer position.
He's in the fetal position.
He was literally begging for his life, almost at one point. So
yeah,
that's why.
Yeah, that was a very poor stop.
There you go. And since then, people sort of forgot about it.
Did Herb go do that to any length like that and just let there be punishment? No, I think everything was only one or two punches more.
Mm-hmm.
And I think when that guy came back, he might have came to, Herb might have seen something. And he's put his leg up and he's put his hand up and he's trying to get a little bit of space, that's all. You know, we've seen in fights before where the fight hasn't been stopped and the guy has recovered and came back.
Mm-hmm.
So I feel like Herb, it didn't warrant Dan to get up and get upset with him. I feel the reason why he got upset with him was, one, he's an ex-fighter. He knows exactly what it's like. And two, I'm pretty sure he knew the guy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
so that's why he was emotionally invested in it, and he wants to look after the guy's health.
Yeah, he didn't really respond in a like orderly manner, especially when you're arguing with the referee.
I think the UFC put out and they went and said they didn't agree with his behavior,
mm-hmm.
and they've went and said, you know, if he wants to continue commenting, he needs to apologize. Mm-hmm. And that's just, all he has to do is apologize. He just said, look, it wasn't the best night for me. I was clearly emotionally invested. I still feel that I acted correctly. However, I do apologize to her or to the fans and things like that. I wanted to bring up, because the main event, see, I didn't get to see all of it, but I did watch the fight afterwards. What did you feel about Robert Whittaker versus Darren Till?
Oof, the Reaper's back.
That was a big fight.
That was great. The strike. Well, there was a lot of mixed reactions to the fight, but in terms of like the entertainment and the strikes that were being thrown, it was a really good fight. There was a lot of striking, but one thing that really impressed me was Robert Whittaker's grappling.
Mm.
He was using his grappling a lot more. There was literally a really good takedown he scored where he threw Darren Till against the. Against the cage.
Well, do you know what I found also really impressive? Darren Till's takedown defense.
Mm.
He's a strong guy. Mm. For middleweight, and he used to be a welterweight. Strong guy. Robert is a big, thick guy, fueled by Musashi and all their protein supplements. He digs for these underhooks, and he's kind of almost, he's like really just like lifting Robert up so he can get those arms in. And then he stuffs the tank down. I don't think Darren's done. And fair play to Rob. He did so well.
Mm-hmm.
He did so well. It was still a close fight.
It was.
It goes to show that Rob still got it.
Mm-hmm.
He's an excellent fighter. And we said before the fight, a lot of people were coming out and saying, oh, we don't think he's the same after Yoel Romero. Like, whatever, 10 rounds of Yoel Romero. He's obviously fine.
Yeah.
He's got that fire in his belly. And it goes to show Darren... That was his second fight in middleweight.
He's a really good middleweight. He's got a massive future in middleweight.
Exactly. He's super young. He's like 27 or something like that.
He knocked Robert Whittaker down in the first round.
Elbow.
Yeah, an elbow.
Afterwards, Robert said...
All right, let's go, son.
No, Robert said after the fight, he said he put my lights out.
Yeah.
And he came to afterwards.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Yeah.
It goes to show that Darren can...
He can hang. He can hang in middleweight.
He can hang with the middle. And then after Izzy went and said, I still want to fight Darren. He's got beautiful striking. I agree.
Yeah.
Imagine having a striking match between Darren Till and Israel Adesanya.
That would be a great fight.
It'd be beautiful, wouldn't it?
But the thing is, Adesanya, well, in order for Darren Till to get there, he's got to win. At least a couple more.
Yeah.
And middleweight's a great division, but right now Adesanya and Paulo Costa they're finalizing the deal. It's not official yet, according to Dana White, but they're trying to finalize the deal and they're going to lock heads between each other. I think that's the main fight that everyone wants to see at middleweight.
I so want to see that fight.
Because Costa and Adesanya have been going at each other's throats for a while.
Did you see that Dan Hardy was saying, Paulo Costa, and this isn't knocking Dan Hardy, I love Dan Hardy. I love when he interviews the fighters and things like that. He's got a really good take on a lot of things when he breaks down fights beforehand. But he was saying, Izzy's technique is just so much better, which is true. And, you know, Paulo Costa's just kind of got he's just a power lifter.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think so. He's obviously a workhorse. He's enormous. He looks, to be fair, powerlifters don't look like that. Bodybuilders look like that.
Mm-hmm.
Powerlifters are the big, big guts, and they don't care about what their physique looks like. He looks like a bodybuilder, just like your Romero, but mm-hmm. it's proper natural or athletic muscle. Like, they didn't... It's not like it's not functional. That guy's clearly got cardio as well. When we saw him fight at Yoel Romero.
Oh yeah.
He kept going.
His durability as well.
He's got a chin.
Mm-hmm.
It's not an easy fight for Izzy. I do think Izzy will win.
Yeah.
But it's not an easy fight for him.
Not even that, but the way that Izzy fought Yoel Romero, a lot of people found it very, very boring. You know,
it's a counterpuncher.
Yeah.
You can't get upset when Yoel Romero laughing. For 2 minutes, first 2 minutes of the first round, he stood there. He just stood there.
Yeah.
Just looking at him.
And Yoel Romero, he's not a guy who likes to throw heavy. He's not a very heavy volume hitter. He's usually one of those guys who goes really, really slow, and he makes a big swing.
He lulls you into like a false sense of security, so he'll be like this and do like that. Maybe doing some trapping hand stuff and then go this, and then he'll just run at you, flying knees or like...
And it works. That's how he gets his knockouts.
Yeah.
That flying knee that he did against...
I wonder what it would be like to see his... Sorry for cutting off, but... I wonder what it would be like to see his actual wrestling, because he never uses it. His actual wrestling as a Cuban athlete. Like, I've seen some videos of him doing it, but we don't see it in the UFC because he's affected his neck. Like, he got surgery for his neck. And I think they fused part of his cervical spine, and that's why there's a big scar on the back of his neck and that. But, and I think that's why he doesn't wrestle, because he can't afford to mess up his neck. But it's weird that someone that high caliber of an athlete, wrestling-wise, he doesn't use it. Isn't that weird that he does striking?
Yeah.
But, like, how long has he really done striking for?
He likes a highlight reel. That's what I can say. He likes a brawl.
He does, but that guy can wrestle, and he's... obviously incredibly good at wrestling, but he never taps into it. I wonder if it'd be like if we saw Yoel Romero earlier on. Because, no, he's 40. Imagine if we saw a 20 or 30-year-old Yoel Romero.
Mm-hmm.
Scary man. Very, very scary.
Would it be best? Do you reckon he was as big or even big or just a little bit smaller? That's the thing, like, cute with those Yoel Romero-type figures. You look at them and you go, what? Come on. Come on, son.
Well, he doesn't walk around that 185. He walks around at like 210.
There you go. But not even that. But he's that in his 40s and he looks that good. Like most 20-year-olds can't even get any close.
I think he's 43. Good check. I believe he's 43. Right, he just turned 43. Scary dude. He's so scary. A lot of people after the fight were saying, all right, Darren Till versus Yoel Romero. And I could just imagine Darren just going, no, he's scary.
Yeah, too scary. Well, the thing is...
No, he just says that, but Darren's game to fight anyone.
Yeah, and not even that, but the middleweight division just in general, I mean, Yoel Romero sits fourth on the division.
Mm-hmm.
And basically Darren Till is fifth.
Yeah.
So, but it's great. I mean, there's also that Jared Cannonier.
Or Cannonier.
Yeah, Cannonier, sorry. Jared Cannonier. He's sitting comfortably in third. I mean, he wouldn't mind having a fight with Yoel Romero. I mean, that wouldn't be too bad. Or maybe Darren Till versus Jared. You know, could happen either way. But, but right now, Robert... The main one that everyone's after is, of course, Adesanya versus Paulo Costa, because they've been at each other's throats. I'm pretty sure Israel Adesanya, when he beat Robert Whittaker, he jumped up on the cage and he flipped Paulo Costa the bird.
He did.
In the crowd. And not even that, but when he beat Yoel Romero, he was calling him out, you know, swearing in the octagon.
I think Paulo Costa is really trying to be the bad guy of the division, because even after the Robert Whittaker and Darren Till fight, he went and tweeted out and said, they couldn't have been training during isolation. That was such an ugly fight.
Yeah.
He's trying to... And you know it's coming from him. It's not coming from his coach. It's not coming from, you know, like how like a lot of people say, like, oh, stuff that Khabib's tweeting out or Kamaru's tweeting out. It's clearly not from them. It's from their manager, Ali. But when you read Paulo Costa's tweets... you know full well it's coming from, because it has the same little, like, you know those little English things where it doesn't quite transfer over, that it's,
oh,
it's
proper, yeah,
it's proper,
yeah,
English.
Yeah.
You can full tell he's the one writing it.
Yeah.
Dude, have you seen his Twitter?
Oh, yeah.
Funny memes. He has really funny memes. It's like when everyone sees Adesanya, and then it's when Paulo Costa sees Adesanya, and he's like a twig. He's really, really skinny. It's so funny.
Well, it will be an interesting fight because... you know, Adesanya, he's got really good... he's a really good distance fighter. You know, he's got... he's ridiculously tall. And then Costa, he likes to be a bit of a brawler. So it's basically going to be, how is it going to work? Is Adesanya going to use his distance? How is Adesanya going to play up against Costa's wrestling?
I feel like it's going to be a very similar game plan as it was to fight Yoel Romero. But I feel like Paulo Costa will... really race towards him.
Yeah.
I feel like he'll... And it's another fight where Paulo Costa is undefeated. Well, he lost in his tough Brazil thing, but that was an amateur fight, doesn't count. And so Izzy and Paulo, they're both... they both have an undefeated record. When they fight, someone's going to lose an eye.
Who's your take then? Costa or Adesanya?
Adesanya.
I've got to say Adesanya, Adesanya too.
I just feel like in the
realm he'll find
of,
a way.
Yeah, in the realm of mixed martial arts, I really feel like technique overpowers like power.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
And it's proven itself time and time again. But not even that, but Adesanya, he's just probably one of the greatest strikers right now.
Yes.
In the entire UFC.
And he's got, and everyone says, oh, he doesn't have like a ground game. Yeah, he does.
He's got a good ground
game. He does have a good ground game. He almost put Kelvin in a triangle in, I think it was the last round, the fifth round or something like that. Do you really think that, he is like a pure striker, but do you really think he, because they said the same thing about Conor McGregor. Oh, you know, he doesn't, Conor's got what, I think a purple or brown belt in Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu. You're going to play to your strengths. You're going to strike. If you're known to be a really good kickboxer, but you're doing Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu for a much less period of time, why do you have to prove people that you can do it? You use it when you have to. He just, his kickboxing is that good that he's never had to, right? I feel like it was only when Adesanya was put in that scenario that he started to play on his Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu. But, and we haven't really seen that from Paulo Costa as well, because he's Brazilian. I assume he's definitely got, he'll have good wrestling as well as ground game as well. We never see it. That guy, he just loves to get up and bang and throw hands with these guys. It's going to be such a good fight.
It will be. And it'll be great for everyone to watch too. Because pretty much once, if, it's big for Adesanya. Because if Adesanya wins, then he's just proving to everyone that he's probably one of the best middleweights in the world. And I'm pretty sure he wants to go after Anderson Silva's record. Anderson Silva, I'm pretty sure is it John Jones or Anderson Silva? One of the two, they hold the record for most title defenses. I mean, because if you think about it, Anderson Silva pretty much nearly held the middleweight title for almost a decade.
Mm-hmm.
So, and, you know, Adesanya, he's ticking off names, basically. But it also keeps the division, like, on its toes because Adesanya's already beaten Whittaker. If he beats Costa, he's already beaten Euro Romero. Maybe they might have a rematch, but that leaves him with Jared Cannonier and Darren Till. So my prediction is, if Darren Till is going to fight next, it's going to either be Jared or Euro Romero, one of the two. While
I think it might be Cannonier or Romero.
So what we could do is Robert versus Cannonier.
You never know. Maybe like a Uriah Hall or something like that. It could be anyone.
But either way, you know, that top half. But if Adesanya wins, then pretty much he's almost already established a massive dominance over the division. And then one or two more fights, then pretty much he was almost have cleared it out.
I wanted to quickly come away from the MMA stuff for a second because I got a text the other day from a friend from school, Connor Hannum. And his mate, Daniel Aide as well. I knew Daniel as well from school. And they've got a podcast called For a Laugh. And I told you about this before we started doing podcasting. I told you that I know these guys. They've done a podcast for a while as well. So they have a podcast, For a Laugh, and they talk about their own lives, their own stuff going, their own lives, as well as just like general stuff. So you should definitely check them out. Now, it was funny to get a message from them and say, hey, this is like our invitation to come onto their podcast. So you might see it. We'll see if we can sort something out.
That'd be a great
help. Well, I told you about it. We should have them on the podcast beforehand. I said we should collaborate with them because I knew full well our setup wouldn't be good enough for like three or four people.
Oh, they have a great setup. I'll give you that.
And they've got the Rodecaster Pro mixer, and they've got some the Rode mics as well.
They've been doing it for a while.
They've been doing it for a while. I think they switched channels at some point. I'd have to check with them. Now you like them. they're both really nice guys.
I listened to a couple of episodes. They're pretty good. They vibe pretty well together.
I've listened to those episodes as well, but I listened to that one the full way through. I think I listened to it twice, actually, because I was driving to work and things like that. But they've definitely got a really good setup. They have a much bigger space for us to talk as well. Yeah. I thought it was really funny how Connor said, hey, maybe if we do go on, Daniel, no disrespect, but actually I want to go on and like you to stay at home or whatever. He was just saying, we're two completely different people. You're perfectly welcome for all four of us.
I mean, that would be great, but we need more. Obviously, we're going to need more cameras. We're going to need more microphones
and things like that. We might have to go on theirs first, and then when we upgrade them, they could be our first guest.
I think that's a good idea. Well, Daniel and... Sorry, who's the other guy?
Connor. I sent it to him and he watched it, and Joe just sent me back a message within quotations, who's the other guy?
Because, they're like, do we know the other guy? I'm like,
because Daniel and Connor were talking about me and they said, and who's the other guy? Do we know the other guy? He seems like a nice guy.
Joe is the guy. I'm that guy. But I mean, it will be great. So it will be. So Connor, yeah, I got your back, buddy. I think it was them who said it, but it will be great. I mean, not even that, but we'll have the first pair of guests. But not even that, but it will be great for both of us. You know, basically just working in collaboration with each other. And the things that they talk about, it's quite similar to what we do for the Everyday Hour.
It is similar to what we do for the Everyday Hour, because we have the MMA Hour, which is just fairly pure. We might spill into some random stuff in the MMA Hour, but it's typically an MMA show. And then the other one is the Everyday Hour, which is pretty much talking about everyday shit.
You know what would be really good? If we sat them down, got them to watch a UFC card.
See, that's why I want to invite them one time for when we watch a fight.
Oh, yeah.
And we go to the pub, because I know they love to drink. Every time they're on the podcast, they've got a beer and they're always talking about... they always say, oh, I'm hungover, and I'm hungover too. They love to drink. No, I saw after the podcast, Daniel, they did like a Christmas thing. It was like 12 days before Christmas or whatever, but it was 12 pints.
12 pints.
And I think Daniel did 13 or something like that, because you don't drink.
I don't drink much. I don't drink, like...
At all.
Well, the reason why I don't like to drink is because when you're someone who works out or someone who's just...
you feel terrible. Your test goes down. Just... Plummets.
Well, it's just the effect is higher, but it doesn't last as long in the system because the metabolism's a lot higher. Yeah. But the effect is stronger because you're not used to it. Because I never drink. Like if I have one or two beers, I just start yawning nonstop. I feel tired. I feel slow, and that's just not a feeling I enjoy. For me, I'm a caffeine addict. Like I was when I was working in the warehouse. I have like a monster a day. And two scoops of pre-workout before you even train.
That's not good for you.
Yeah, well...
I don't have caffeine anymore because I get palpitations. My heart. And I'm trying to get to sleep. I can feel my heartbeat in my head.
But for me, basically, it's just like inject it or wake up. And 7 IV drip is just a monster. And then just wait. That's the first thing I do in the morning. Oh, and just go all day. It's because I like having high energy.
Caffeine powder off your credit card.
Like cocaine's too weak for me, you know what I mean? I would have tried cocaine for the first time. I'd be like, you got any left? Not feeling anything. You're like, dude, you just had the whole bag. I'm like, it's nothing.
It's nothing compared to Joe's secret pre-workout. So we'd love to, just tracking back, we'd love to come onto their podcast and for them to come onto ours. Most likely, we'll need to go to theirs first because they have a bigger space. Because we're already kind of pressed for space already, and we also don't have the mics.
And also, I want to give them that respect because they came out. Came to us first. Exactly. They reached out to us first, so I reckon it would be more respectful for us to go to them, help them out. If it goes great, they come on to us.
Oh, it would be great. They do actually quite long-form podcasts anyway. They usually do, like... We usually typically do about an hour.
Mm-hmm.
It's usually 50 to maybe 60, 70 minutes or whatever. They do at least 2 hours most of the time.
At least 2 hours.
Well,
that's impressive.
Usually, and it's not easy to keep doing it for that space of time, I don't think. It's not easy.
No, it's not. I mean, because there's only so many things you can talk about and you've got to research it, but normally sometimes we just talk off the top of our heads. I mean, we do our research.
We bring up our topics and things like that. We talk a little bit, but sometimes you don't want to exhaust the topics beforehand with your mate. And then when you go here, it's like a rehearsal. It's not like we're literally having a conversation just off the top of our heads. I really like their podcast. I think it's great. I'd love to. We would love to come on, and then vice versa for them to come over to ours. I think that'd be excellent. I think I'll flick on the time code for this so that you can watch it, or just the audio version as well. And that's their invitation to come to ours. I already told them. I think they were a little bit confused about what our show was when we said the MMA Hour, and they thought it was predominantly an MMA show. It's like 50-50. It's MMA, and the other 50% is just everyday. Because it's the everyday hour, it literally means that it's not filmed every day. It's the everyday shit. Anything we want. But we'd love for them to come on. That would be really cool. And their setup looks really nice. I love the pictures on the background and things like that. I'd listened to their podcast before. I just knew we didn't have the setup for them. Yeah. That was the thing. And Connor said he mentioned that, I haven't seen Jack in quite a while. I saw him at the pub. That was quite a while ago. I think it was when...
Yeah, what's the story behind this?
I think that was Innes. I think, you remember Innes?
I remember Innes.
He came back. I think he came back at some point. And I think he wanted everyone to hang out at the boat or something like that. So we went to the boat and we're just chilling. The boat's probably like 10 minutes north from me.
Like the boat, as in the boat's name?
The boat's called the...
Oh, okay. It's a boat.
No, it's like a big pub kind of restaurant kind of thing.
In a boat? So like you walk in and you're in the cabin?
No, smart ass. It's not a boat. It's just called the boat because it's by the water. Jesus Christ. And then we're just sitting outside. And I think a lot of... Connor... sounds like Connor loves a pint, so he's probably there having a pint himself. And then he came over. I was just having a nice chat with him. Yeah, he's a really nice guy. I met him earlier on. I met him in year 7 of middle school at my school. And I think
over a pint?
No, it was around. we don't drink when you're in year 7, Joe. I'm like, you English bastard. But I think we had the same guitar teacher. We had the same guitar teacher. And I just got to know him that way. And we talked in that. I knew he did have the podcast because I knew he has a YouTube channel. He does vlogging as well. I think I think something that you'd be really interested in, they talk quite a lot about films. And we love films.
We do.
I think they quite enjoy like those comic book films as well and the superhero stuff. They're super into the movies as well.
That would be great.
And I'm pretty sure Daniel, he does stand-up comedy as well, like the open mics.
Really?
Yeah, and you do open mics.
I do open mics. I didn't know he did open mics.
They briefly mentioned it, so that's another good... So I'm going to see... Hopefully we can talk to them soon on a podcast. That'd be really good. And that means you guys can totally talk about...
I'll catch them at the open mic night, you know?
Yeah.
Well, I might catch them at the open... I might have crossed paths with him before. Maybe I didn't know him.
You might have.
Well, because I always do those... When I do my open mics...
You've done open mics for probably just over a year, right?
Yeah. Well, I it would be 2 years in...
It's 2 years?
So it'll be 2 years in... What is it? November. Yeah, but the thing is, I've only done a few gigs this year. Well, yeah. One, because I was absolutely stuck for time when it came to, uni and jobs and stripping and all that shit on the weekends. And now I'm out of uni. But the other reason why I didn't do it as much was because of COVID. Yeah. I was still writing jokes during COVID, but I wasn't, like, actually getting up there. But I'm coming back in a couple of weeks, so.
Yeah.
But just, like, right now, I'm just focusing on building my PT business. You know, and just obviously trying to build this because of how much faith I have in this podcast that one day it will be.
Well, I put out, if you guys didn't know and you're just more of a casual listener or whatever, on our Facebook page, as well as our Instagram, I put out that we'd reached, I think we reached 100 downloads perfectly a month after we started.
There we go.
It was perfectly 1 month. We got 100 downloads and we got about 240 views on YouTube. And that was just posting once or twice a week for the time being.
That's one thing. That's one of the ideas I wanted to stress right now. It's just the importance of consistency and just being patient. If we achieve that in just 1 month, think about what we can achieve in a whole year or 2 years or 5+ years.
10 years.
Like, exactly. It just shows that, you know, if you stick to something, when you start something for the first time, you're never going to be good at it.
Yeah.
You know, no one's ever good at something for the first time. And that's when you make the most amount of mistakes. And then that's when you got to ask yourself somewhere down the track, oh, how much do I want to do this? But if you try, if you go hard and you keep going, you keep going, be consistent.
To be honest, I don't think about it too much like this. I just like sitting down and having a chat with you, and like, it's, this is fun. We do this normally. Yeah. All we're doing is recording a conversation that's, we normally would.
That's the other thing.
This is fun.
Yeah, that's the other thing, because it's also very meaningful to us.
Yeah.
So when you're doing, and that's the other thing I'm always telling people these days, are there's these kids these days and they're going through a hard time in school. Like, I don't know what I want to do. Or
it has to start with passion.
Yeah, that's what you got to do. You got to find passion, but you also got to find something that gives your life meaning.
Yeah.
And having conversations about this sort of stuff and putting it up on YouTube and talking about it, it gives us a sense of purpose.
Well, one thing is we're super passionate about MMA, which is why it's 50% MMA stuff, right? A lot of our Instagram might have a bit of MMA, but we've been posting a lot of other everyday stuff as well.
That's the thing. It's just process of taking something that you like and looking at it and then thinking, okay, how can I get this sort of stuff out there? How can I make this into a business? Like, all the time.
This is fun.
Exactly. Well, one thing I always tell
you. Why don't you want to get paid for having fun?
Yeah. That's the other thing. Not even that, but time's irrelevant.
We're not doing it to be rich.
No.
We're not doing it to be rich. Like, it's fun. imagine if it just pays for itself and you can just sit down and have a laugh and it's fun. You can talk to, like, later down the line, we're going to have better people on the podcast.
Mm-hmm. And then we're going to be like, dude, you remember that time when we used to be just in your room and it was just us, no IKEA table, two microphones and a laptop?
Exactly.
That's it. That's what it's going
to
be.
We're going to be talking to people and, with a lot of podcasts, it's very interesting to listen to these intelligent people and these inspiring people. Why not? Like, imagine if we get even better people on there. I think it's just fun. It's just fun. I like it. Why wouldn't you want to sit down and be around good people?
It's literally the idea of taking something that you love and just putting it into something like a business. Like all the same, I tell a lot of kids I know these days, or a lot of guys or girls, play video games and they talk religiously about video games or comics, and I just say, why don't you do Twitch streaming? You know, why don't you do comic book reviewing? You know, if you want to be a movie, be a movie critic, start a YouTube channel.
There's a lot of video games podcasts out there as well.
Oh,
podcasts are huge. I think they estimated there's about 250,000 podcasts.
That's right, but not even that. But right now is the best time in human history to ever be a part of taking something that you love and turning it into a meaning. Because let's go back down the track. 30 years ago, I don't think even podcasts were a thing. They had radio, but there weren't really many.
Radio is really, like, gross now.
God, dude.
They all speak the same, and they all...
I honestly believe that one day podcasts will overtake radio, because I hate radio. I reckon radio's going to die at some point.
To listen to radio?
The only reason why radio is still around is because it's installed in your car. That's it. Once we eliminate that, imagine if we got podcasts installed into your car.
Well, you've already got Bluetooth and things like that. You can already choose. They have services like in Australia called Podcast One, which they advertise on the radio.
Yeah. But
have you seen that a lot of radio hosts?
No.
Their show.
I don't listen to radio. It's shit.
But there's a lot of radio hosts that have actually converted their show and made it.
Hamish and Andy did that.
Hamish Nandy did that. Other ones, I think it was like maybe Fitzy and Whipper or whatever. They turned that into like a podcast thing. All of them have done it.
Not even that, but like, how many times have you ever seen, how many times do people have been chained to radio stations change radio hosts?
Yeah.
Like, the only three radio hosts that I could ever remember were the ones I listened to were Lisa, Baz, and Sam. I think those were the three people. They used to do 92.9, and they were really good together because the conversations that they had were actually, like, really interesting. I flip on the radio these days and it goes, so Jimmy, this is actually a real fucking story. It's like, so Jimmy, I woke up this morning and my dishwasher wasn't working. Like, oh my God, my dishwasher. So I call up the warranty. I'm like, mate, I don't give a fuck about your dishwasher. I want to know what's going on in the world. I want to hear about, you know, COVID. Just
listen to like interesting stuff.
I don't want to hear who wakes up, turns on the radio, it's like, oh my God, did you solve the dishwasher problem?
I don't know. I don't want to know how many plates are in your dishwasher.
I don't know if the dishwasher's under fucking warranty.
Funnily enough, I don't care.
Yeah, that's the point. They're saying shit we don't care about, basically, but not even that. But
I find podcasts, when you're there's going to be some effect that you just want to listen to something just to like take your mind off something when you do like a meaningless task or whatever, right? But I feel like podcasts should be answering a question they didn't know they needed answered. That's what it is.
That's actually a good way of saying
that, you're literally answering, you're giving them information for a question they didn't quite think about. But they're like, I do want to know. I do want to know what you thought about the UFC. I do want to know what's next. I do want to know what it's like being a uni student at this point in time. I do want to know what 21-year-old stripper's life is like, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I do want to know how to look after my money or be an entrepreneur. That's why
it's
you're answering questions to a question they may have thought about or may have not thought about it. But when they read it, they go, "I want that information."
It's because the age of information these days is so vast. There is just so much information these days. But not only that, but like the reason why the podcast and the reason why there's so many podcasts is because it's for every topic. You know what I mean? We do MMA Hour, so a lot of fight fans would want to watch us. Or Everyday Hour, just people who just want to listen to two guys talk. But there's also very, very specific podcasts, like there's crime, finance.
The true crime ones are
very popular.
Very popular. I don't like it. It sounds so gross.
Well, the fact that they're just trying to like emphasize it, like it's like a guy who's got like a really deep voice and keeps like gunshots going off in the background. Yeah, but I think that's maybe just a way of advertising. But there's a lot of podcasts out there that literally just have stick to one single topic, which I think is okay, but I feel like you're limiting your audience to just that one area, which is why I think it's good that we do this MMA Hour and Everyday Hour.
The MMA and Everyday Hour means they may come for the MMA and stay for the Everyday, or they may come for the Everyday and stay for the MMA, or you're just genuinely interested. Like, we are two guys, we're very young, we're passionate about our podcast and things like that. Just watch us.
I think it's just diversifying, really, your audience.
Coming back to the podcast we were talking about earlier, Daniel and Connor's podcast, the For a Laugh podcast, they do a lot of that, and they talk about the Everyday Hour, our Everyday Hour stuff. The reason why they also weren't too sure was they don't really listen to the MMA Hour. For example, Connor went and said, we don't really know a lot about MMA because we're not really sports guys, right? Mm. And I actually messaged them back, and at the end I said, we'll make an MMA fan out of you. Yeah, I really feel like you don't have to be an expert. Obviously, I have a background in martial arts. You have a background in martial arts, a little bit of background. You work at the UFC gym.
I know.
Right?
Yeah.
If there's, like, I did martial arts since I was 7 years old, doing kickboxing, grappling, Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu. I've done a lot, right? I don't train anymore, but I do a record. I stopped when I was 20. But I'm thinking about going into Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu. It's just expensive. When I quit at 20, that was the point where, because my parents, I was fortunate enough that my parents because they put me at such a young age, they said they were going to pay for you to do martial arts, which is really fortunate because I owe a great deal of my life to martial arts. It's super important, right? But I stopped because I wanted to do something a bit different to complete it, and I wanted to do Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu. I realized somehow, I already knew martial arts gyms are super expensive. Holy shit. Those Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu, if you want to go to a good Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu school, expensive.
How much?
Oh, it's a lot, dude. It's a lot. I can't tell you right off the top of my head, but I know even, like, I wouldn't do it for private sessions. I'm doing it to roll with everybody, right? Mm-hmm. I'd love to do Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu, but don't even try to book a private.
Well,
privates are $80 to $100 a session.
Really? Well, the reason why they'd be that much is because those Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu gyms are just for that one thing.
Mm.
You know what I mean? And that's why I like the UFC gym so much, is because we got boxing, we got functional training, we got a weights area, we got a freaking octagon.
Well, they had all of that at the gym I trained. We had, they had Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu stuff as well, but I just wanted to go to a singular. That's literally they specialized. I looked up to see if there was any Gracie Jiu-Jitsu schools, and I'm pretty sure there are Gracie Jiu-Jitsu schools in Perth. Although, to be fair, Gracie Jiu-Jitsu is such a famous name now that they've literally just called their school. So whether or not they come from Gracie Jiu-Jitsu, I don't know, but I'm super interested in doing jiu-jitsu in the future. I've gone a little bit off topic, unfortunately, but I was meaning that I feel like we could take out those guys that don't really are super interested, give them a little bit of background information and actually get them interested in it. And if they just like, I think if they listen to a commentator, they might not know what they're saying, but if we break it down for them while they're watching the fight and say, hey, this is this guy, what he's going for right now, he's going for a Kimura. Now what he's going to do, he's going to try and like tell them little bits of information. Mm-hmm. And I feel like we could, now you can't force someone to be interested in something, either they are or they're not, but I feel like you could really get a lot of MMA fans, a lot of people that weren't so big a fan of MMA interested in the sport.
Well, it's the fastest growing sport right now.
Easily.
And it's still in its early teenage, I reckon it's a teenager now. It's starting to mature. It's really starting to mature because, you know, we've got more divisions, we've got more fighters, it's played around the world a lot more.
It was a baby when it was Hoyler Gracie.
Mm-hmm.
Sorry, not Hoyler, Hoist Gracie.
Mm-hmm.
Hoist Gracie. Then it went into the latest stages when it had Ken Shamrock and Tito Ortiz and it had Chuck Liddell. Then they had other fighters where they had, you know, Diego Sanchez, who was the season one winner. Then they had, you know, they had Rampage Jackson, they had Anderson Silva, they had GSP, they had Forrest Griffin, they had BJ Penn. They had so many fighters all the way. They had Randy Couture. They had everyone up until now the teenager, which is, you know, the Conor McGregor is still there, but there was that Conor McGregor era.
Yeah, and the Ronda Rousey era. Was a big shift. Those two specifically were the big shift.
There was Ronda and Conor. Then there was, you know, the Khabib section.
Yeah.
Then there was the Masvidal section.
Yeah.
And
well, the Masvidal section is what we're going for now. We also got the Adesanya section because now it's because it's branching out into all these different countries. Because I'm pretty sure Adesanya and Usman, they paved the way because they're both from Nigeria.
Yeah.
So they paved the way for that country. And then Conor McGregor, he sort of paved the way for Ireland, you know. And then like Rousey sort of like paved the way for women. Because she was the first female champion, and now she's basically like built, like kickstarted the whole female division. Mm-hmm. And now you got all these countries. Now we got Weili Zhang from China.
Yeah.
We now we got
first female Chinese champion.
There we are. You know, it's just all these. It's just branching out around the world because I'm pretty sure Khabib, he's from Dagestan.
He's from Dagestan.
I'm pretty sure we didn't have a Dagestan champion before him. And then we had like,
you know, there's a lot of Dagestanis that are coming into the fight game now, though.
Yeah. And then we also, you know, you got the the birth of the double weight champ, so the double division champions, you know, kind of started that. Now we got Amanda Nunes, Daniel Cormier did it, you know, and it's now becoming increasingly a thing for fighters to interact between different divisions. So,
Henry Cejudo as well.
Oh, yes, of course.
Was he the, I think it'd be the fourth, wouldn't he? I think it would be the fourth. The second one was DC.
Yeah.
The third one was
Amanda.
Amanda.
And then
the fourth was Henry Cejudo.
Yes, yes.
I think there's only been four double champs, but Conor started it.
Yeah.
Well,
that's the thing I wanted. Like, Conor, fucking... everyone's, like, waiting for him to make an announcement because...
I don't think it's his fault. I don't think it's his fault because he's super motivated. I think that you can call me a Conor whatever fanboy, right?
Yeah.
However... Do the UFC, or does really Conor want to come out to an empty crowd? Probably not. He has all the money in the world. Do you know why he probably comes back?
Yeah.
Because he's got how many fans cheering his name and an island. I think when it starts to move back after this post-corona thing, maybe the end of the year, maybe next year, when they can actually fill people in the seats, Conor will have a fight.
Absolutely.
And I think Conor should fight Dustin Poirier.
There we go. There we go. Because if you look at five of the highest viewing pay-per-view buys in UFC history, four of them were Conor McGregor. One of them was just recently, is it Usman versus Masvidal. So yeah. Khabib versus Conor was the highest pay-per-view, right?
Well, they made the point. They made the point that there was Conor versus Nate Diaz had the same amount of pay-per-view buys as Jorge Masvidal versus Kamaru Usman, right?
I think around that, yeah.
He was 1.3 million or something like that, right? Now, they made the argument that that's really impressive, but another argument was made, hey, they barely even advertised that. They did some press conference or whatever. They threw, that was pretty much, they didn't really do any advertising for that fight, but the Kamaru versus Jorge fight, they had global pandemic and shutdown, very little sports on the TV, huge amount of advertising. This was actually for a title, whereas Conor's wasn't. They built up that fight so much and advertised it and put so much into it, and it just scraped to where I think it was the first Conor versus Diaz fight. Mm. That's saying something because Diaz, the rematch, did better than that. His fight with I think it might be the Alvarez fight. It might have been the Alvarez. I can't remember. But it was one of Conor's big fights in the later of his career. But then the Alvarez one was huge. The Khabib one was huge.
The return when he fought against
Donald. Oh, no, they were saying that it did the exact same as Cerrone. So that's it did right. The exact same as McGregor versus Cerrone. But McGregor versus Cerrone wasn't for a title. It was barely advertised. It was Conor just coming back. Right? It wasn't advertised clearly as much as it was for Usman. It was on Fight Island. Jesus Christ, they didn't have a Fight Island for McGregor versus Cerrone, and it just scraped to the same level as that pay-per-view. To be fair, you can also make the argument during a coronavirus and people aren't working as much, they don't have as much money just to spend on luxuries like a pay-per-view. Is it super expensive? Probably not. Probably what, $50 US, maybe something like that.
I think it's just also had the fact that people were just at home and they just wanted that form of entertainment. Like Netflix, when coronavirus struck, Netflix went through the fucking
roof. Netflix, Stan, Hulu, everything, YouTube. Yeah. YouTube would have went nuts. Podcasting went nuts. The next fight, because I know we brought up Ronda Rousey. And we know, remember her head coach?
Oh, yeah.
He's also got a rising star, which is Edmund Shabazian versus Derek Brunson. Now, I've actually noticed that Derek Brunson actually watches he's watched a good few of our Instagram stories. So thank you, Derek, for the support. Yeah. For coming back to the Instagram and just having a squiz. But I'd love to talk to him on the show, actually. We can do that in the future. But that's going to be a really good fight because Derek Brunson is no slouch at all. Was it Lyoto Machida he knocked out in the first round? I think he knocked out Lyoto Machida in the first round. He's had some great fights. I mean, the one that a lot of people's minds come to is his fight with Adesanya, because he had a big bit of beef with Adesanya. But Edwin Shahbazyan, he's 11-0, and he's 22 years old. He's a year older than us, and he has 11. He's 11-0. He's well-rounded. He's done. He's a huge amount of martial arts background. This guy,
he's no joke. He's a first-round finisher as well.
Exactly.
Of the 11 fights that he's won, only one has made it past the first round.
Exactly.
He's a first round knockout artist, you know, and he's only had one fight past the first round. That went to the third round via split decision against Darren Stewart. But he's a TKO. He knocks people the fuck out, and you know, especially with head kicks as well.
He does this good. It's not quite a switch kick, but it's a roundhouse off his lead left leg.
Mm-hmm.
He does that and just catches them in the face with it. It's not quite a switch kick, but he catches them because he's quite flexible. This is going to be an incredible fight. I'm so keen for this guy. Everyone, I mean, it definitely should be the middleweight main event, but that Edwin Shahbazyan, they should be scared of this guy. They really should be scared of this guy because he's a scary dude.
And Derek Brunson, he's got a massive fight experience, you know. He's fought Adesanya, he fought Silva, he's fought Whittaker, he fought Yura Romero. Like, he's fought a lot of the middleweight division. You know, he's fought the big names, so he's going to have a lot of, he's got a lot of experience under his belt. So basically, you got an experienced fighter versus a young prospect.
Yeah.
So that's a classic matchup. So. Exactly. Either way, we'll see where it goes, because they're both fourth and fifth on the rankings too.
Well, Brunson hasn't fought in probably about a year. Mm-hmm. He hasn't fought in about a year, whereas we know that Edmund, he fought on the Masvidal card with Usman, I'm pretty sure. Oh no, it might have been Diaz. Against Diaz, sorry.
Yeah.
So neither of them, so he hasn't fought since November, and Derek Brunson hasn't fought since August last year. So I'm excited to see this fight. Yep, so they did a first round KO of Lyoto Machida. Lyoto Machida is an incredibly powerful striker. He's
a former champion, isn't he? Machida.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. So he's, you know, a lot of people sleep on Derek Brunson. I think a lot of people are quite disrespectful about him because some people have called him the gatekeeper of the middleweight division. He's no slouch, dude.
He's no joke.
He loses to people that are like very good. Like in Strikeforce, he lost to you remember Renato Sosa? Scary guy. He's lost to Yoel Romero. He lost to Whittaker. He lost to Anderson Silva. He lost to Ronaldo Sosa, and he lost to Israel Adesanya.
He's been around for quite some time. He's got some big names. He's got some big knockouts. You know, he's got quite a good lot of first round finishes. He goes to the end. He's got a good gas tank. So either way, it'll be.
He's literally showed that he can go the full distance. Yes. Right? His last two fights have gone to decision, and you could say, oh well, he hasn't. He's gone to his decision, which literally shows he's got a gas tank. He can dominate over. And he can knock people out, and he can also. Because he's knocked out people in the first round, and he's going to the decision. It literally shows that we haven't seen that from Edmund. You know, we haven't seen him demonstrate that he's got that gas tank. You know, I think it's going to be a crazy good fight. I really don't know who to choose. I really don't know who to pick at this point.
But we for damn sure will be watching it. That's for sure.
Oh, we'll be watching it. It's on this Sunday, and we'll be watching that. Does he have the ability to beat Edmund and have him lose that O? We're just going to have to find out. Because I found about Edmund probably maybe a year ago when Arahuani was doing a lot of... he was doing interviews and he was interviewing his head coach, which was Ronda Rousey's old head coach.
Mm-hmm.
And
plus he's got something to prove, because a lot of people contribute Ronda Rousey's fall to Edmund. Well, we're not pointing the finger and blaming him, but he was considered one of the most controversial coaches in the UFC. Yeah, a lot of people were criticizing him for his style and his attitude towards everything and his ringside coaching. Like, when Amanda Nunes beat Ronda Rousey, she was basically like putting her fingers to her lips as like a sign to saying to shut up towards Edmund. And she even said, oh, he talks too much. That the reason why I did that was as an insult to him.
Yeah, well, he's definitely... I mean, you can't be a bad head coach, right? To have
well, like the saying goes, man, there's no bad students, only bad teachers.
True, mm-hmm. True. Absolutely. Everyone knew that Ronda Rousey, she had a narrow skill set.
Yes.
She did have a narrow skill set. She could, she was good at hitting in the clinch. When it came to outboxing, it wasn't her forte. You know, everyone's saying, her striking wasn't bad. However, when you compare it to someone like Holly Holm and Amanda Nunes, it doesn't compare.
Yes.
It doesn't compare. Someone with that amount of kickboxing experience, it's not going to compare, right? The thing that Ronda Rousey was really good at, excellent judo throws and getting very quickly into arm bars, super quickly, right? And making people tap. It was her forte. She had a very narrow skill set, but you can make the exact same thing about some strikers, right? A lot of people, it doesn't matter what you do. I think a lot of people criticize you. I think Ronda Rousey was still a great fighter, one of the greats. I think they're a bit too harsh on her boxing skills. Her boxing skills, they should have been improved by Edmund. And I think it could have been improved a lot, because after her loss to Holly Holm, I expected her to come with a different attitude and be a bit smarter in that. When she fought Amanda Nunes, she just...
Yeah.
She just sped in front of her.
A lot of people have made the argument that when Ronda Rousey come back, to fight for the title straight away is a massive problem. Mm-hmm. You know, because it's when you've been out for so long, it's so hard to get back into that pace and then be at that, you know, ready as a number one contender.
Yeah.
She should have fought someone as a tune-up fight, then built her way up to Amanda Nunes, because the sport changed so much within the year that she was away. And not even that, but it just shows that she was a household name in general. I'm pretty sure she got I remember when she fought on like New Year's Eve or something. I think it was New Year's Eve, New Year's Day. I remember it was close to around there. And when she fought her, basically for the promotion, it was mainly just Ronda's face. Not many, because they knew that she was a household name and people wanted to come back just to see her fight. But Amanda Nunes, when she was already like dominating the division, and it was no joke.
Everybody knew she was already a hot prospect for coming for that. Oh, yeah. Anyway, but They didn't exactly throw her the easiest obstacle, did they? Amanda Nunes is considered
the greatest.
The female goat.
Yeah. Right?
The greatest of all time. They threw that to Ronda Rousey after she had one of the most devastating like head kick losses to Holly Holm. It was a bit too...
Because I'm pretty sure Trump tweeted about that fight as well.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I don't remember.
Yeah, I remember when Holly Holm beat Ronda Rousey, Trump celebrated it in a tweet.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Well, because this is what...
Really?
This was quite some time ago. I think this was when Trump was running for president, too.
Right.
Or he had become president.
I'll look for it right now. Wait, do you remember what he said?
Oh, I just heard Holly Holm beat Ronda Rousey with a head kick. And then he criticised Ronda Rousey. Well, because a lot of people were against Ronda because of her character. You know, a lot of people criticised Ronda because she wasn't really a humble person or a humble champion. You know, obviously she had a pretty rough background. And there was a lot of people were dissing her because when she fought Misha Tate for the second time, and Misha Tate tried to shake her hand, Ronda Rousey just walked off. So that was why a lot of people criticized their character. So
I felt like after Ronda lost to Holly, something huge changed, because A lot of people were thinking that she was going to be a dominant champion for a long time, but yes. After she lost to Holly, and then she went on the Ellen show,
mm-hmm.
Ellen Morning Show, or whatever, and she was talking about how she was about to try and regain her title from Amanda Nunes, and she said, "You guys better tune in because this is probably going to be one of my last fights." She already called it before even fighting.
Really?
Amanda Nunes.
I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Wow. Alrighty.
Yeah. You wanted to talk about, let's talk about the Mountain versus Eddie Hall. That fight is in September, I think.
What the fuck? I mean, I think, what is it with all these people on YouTube or all these people who are non-boxers trying to get into the fight game? Like, you roll your eyes at this all the time, but, like, I know the big elephant in the room here, Jake Paul fighting Nate Robinson on the Roy Jones Jr. versus Mike Tyson undercard. Like, that was the fight that nobody saw coming, nor did anybody ask for.
It didn't make sense because there was no beef. There was no anything about it. And I think we were talking about this off air. This means that he doesn't have a very long time to train either. He has probably,
A
month? No, no, it's in September, so it's like a month
and a half. Oh, okay, a month and a bit.
Yeah. So he has maybe 5 to 6 weeks to train. Yeah, not a long camp.
I don't get it, though, Nate. Like, you're...
To someone that doesn't actually, like...
Fight at all. He's a professional... Well, he's an ex... He's a retired basketball player. He won the slam dunk contest a few times. Oh. He's 5'9". I can't remember what team he played for. I'm sorry, but I'm not a basketball fan. But why? Why would you want to get into the ring with a YouTuber? Because...
You're not a basketball fan?
He has everything to lose.
Yeah.
He's got... Because there's a lot of people who are not basketball fans, but a lot of people are YouTube fans. If he loses to Jake Paul, he's not going to be remembered as the famous basketball player that he is. He's going to be remembered as the 36-year-old man who got knocked out by a 23-year-old kid.
Why is Jake Paul so much taller than an NBA guard? Jake Paul's 6'1".
Is he?
And Robinson is 5'9".
Oh my god!
Can you confirm that he was 5'9"? I find that so
pretty sure
weird.
He's 5'9". Yeah,
it was one of the ones that didn't make sense. It sounded like it didn't make sense.
I'm
super excited for Mike Tyson versus Roy Jones Jr.
Yeah,
by the way,
he's 5'9". Oh man, everyone is. I feel like what really did it have to put it on that under? Well, I mean, because Nate Robinson, it's his first fight ever as a professional boxer.
Do you think it takes away like the credibility of?
I do. I honestly do. I feel like if he loses, he's gonna get his name tarnished. Jake Paul wins this, he just moves up another level.
Do you think it takes away the credibility of the Tyson versus Jones fight? I really feel like
no, I don't. I'll tell you why I don't. Because YouTube boxing is becoming a thing.
I don't even know. That's why I ask. I don't know.
Yeah. Well, it's because YouTube boxing basically started with Joe Weller versus KSI. Then it became KSI versus Logan Paul. Then we had the Logan Paul versus KSI 2. And Jake Paul's fought against his brother Deji and against Gibbon, which is KSI's best friend. And because he keeps calling out KSI, a British YouTuber, and I don't know why, but he hasn't taken a fight yet. So he's just trying to keep something going in the meantime. Because, the fact is that it's a YouTuber fighting an athlete, and not even that, but what's his name? Logan Paul, his older brother, wanted to fight Antonio Brown. Antonio Brown was, I think he was one of the most well-known NFL players. Again, I don't follow NFL, but that dude had some trouble. He was getting into fights with his baby mama. I think he had all these lawsuits in divorce court. His manager dropped him because he was doing all this stupid shit and he was partying all the time. So Logan Paul went after him after he lost to KSI and basically offered him a whole bunch, like millions. I think he also offered him like millions of dollars just to fight. And Antonio Brown just ducked him the whole time because at the same time, like these YouTubers, they have everything to win. They don't have really much to lose, but these professional athletes who are well past their prime, well past their spotlight.
They're YouTubers that will... They're trying to steal someone's hype.
Exactly. Like
they're trying to steal someone's hype and it builds them up. And even if they do lose, it's good content on your YouTube
channel.
It
is. Well, because the athletes are up here, the YouTubers are down here in terms of relevancy, right? Because
the YouTubers sometimes aren't taken seriously.
Exactly. So if the YouTubers lose, they stay here, but if the athletes lose, they go below the YouTubers. They have
everything to gain.
Because it's the younger generation that's getting involved more and more with these YouTubers. So these YouTubers, they don't know about these athletes, but they know about the YouTubers, and more people are going to get views. So the YouTubers are going to get more fans as a result, because nowadays there's an ever-growing bunch of people on YouTube.
Well, YouTube's just increased their fan base as well. Exactly. They just increased their fan base as well.
So that brings me back to the whole idea. It introduces young fans to the sport of boxing. That's one thing I can say.
That's a good point. I just felt it was weird that something so great as Mike Tyson versus Roy Jones Jr. had something that didn't really have hype around it. It just came out of nowhere.
Yeah. Well, I mean, Logan Paul and KSI sold out the Staples Center, and they were...
I've been there. Lovely stadium. It's huge.
Really?
It's enormous. It's in LA. It's brilliant.
Well, because they sold out the Staples Center, and they headlined it, even though they weren't professional boxers, and they had professional boxers on the undercard and the main card. I mean, it's the same thing, I reckon. Again, I think it's just to get some extra money for the Roy Jones Jr. fight, because even if you're not a fan of Mike Tyson, like, he's a household name, and so is Roy Jones Jr. I think he was the king of they called him the king of the 90s. He dominated the 90s in boxing.
Oh, Roy Jones Jr. is no slouch. I think his last fight was 2 years ago.
Oh, yeah.
He stayed, he's one of the best. He's one of the best there is.
Yeah.
I just want to bring up this, because we were talking about it off air. The rules for this exhibition fight are very different from a normal exhibition fight. So, when it comes to Mike Tyson and Roy Jones Jr., neither one is wearing headgear, naturally. Neither of them they're going to have 12-ounce gloves, but there will be no clear winner unless it is by KO or TKO, right?
Whoa.
So if neither of them knocks each other out in 8 rounds, because it's an 8-round exhibition match, it will go to a draw. Strange.
It's strange. Well, it's because they're both older, much, much older men. Like, Roy Jones Jr. is 51 and Mike Tyson's 53.
Power doesn't go there.
Yeah. And to see 2 50-year-old dudes beating the shit out of each other, I don't know if people are going to find it as entertaining. But let me ask you a question before we finish up. Roy Jones Jr. versus Mike Tyson, both in their prime, who wins?
Tyson.
Yeah.
It's not like I haven't seen Roy Jones Jr. fight. Excellent, they're two of the greats, right? I just feel like Mike Tyson's style would have worked really well. That peekaboo style would have worked really well. I would have loved to see that fight in their prime, but, you know, they're obviously both well in their prime. Mike Tyson's 54, Roy Jones Jr. is 51. They're not too far off each other. If anyone has the most work to do, it's Tyson, because Roy Jones Jr. is most likely still in good shape. However, you know, we've seen the videos from Tyson, even when he wasn't working out and he was lightning fast. Everyone talked about how good Tyson's power was, but the one thing that Tyson used so well was footwork. And I saw something today, and it was Floyd Mayweather, and he was saying that everyone calls it the Philly Shell. I love Philadelphia. I love the culture, the people, the artists that come out of Philadelphia.
Mm.
But it's no longer called the Philly Shell. It is called the Mayweather defense, because I don't really care who used it first or came up with it. I made it mine because I mastered it. If there's anyone that the peekaboo style should be made after, it's most likely Mike Tyson, because he mastered the peekaboo style. And I feel like it would have worked really well. It's going to work really well in their fights. He closes distance so well. Mike Tyson is so evasive. All right. The only thing I'm questioning is the older men. I question cardio. That's what I question. I don't question power. Power is one of the last things to go. I question maybe a little bit of speed, maybe, or sticking to the same pace. Timing will be the same. because they're both obviously still very intelligent boxers. I feel like cardio is the only thing, don't you think?
I understand.
Because a lot of that will... You're a coach at the UFC gym. Who's been your kind of like oldest client so far?
I'm not going to say name, but I've got a man.
No, you don't have to say that name. I'm just talking about age.
The oldest client I have is a man in his 40s.
In his 40s, right? And what would be like some of the main things that you try and work on?
Just maintaining good posture, because it's basically over time it falls. He just like making sure he maintains that flexibility, that range of motion, because it starts to decline over time, and just overall just maintaining that same work ethic, really.
Mm-hmm.
And just it's more when as you get older, it's less about improving but maintaining.
Yeah. Do you find it's a lot harder to maintain the endurance stuff?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah. Do you find... I would make the argument, I mean, both coming from a sports science background, that it's a lot harder for these older guys to do that endurance work, because a lot of the time they're going to have to do a lot of low impact stuff in order to be okay, because, I mean, 50-year-old boxers trying to do... You know, they're not normal people. They're athletes. They've already got probably stuffed up joints and things like that from doing an enormous amount of working out. What kind of cardio training do you think they're probably doing? Do you think maybe swimming and low impact stuff maybe?
Yeah, well, obviously skipping? They're going to have a lot of injuries over the time, because I'm pretty sure they've had maybe surgeries, or their body wouldn't have the same flexibility or move like it used to. I think both of them
combined, they've probably got over 100 wins in pro fights.
Oh, yeah. Well,
what do you think? What do you think they're probably doing for endurance training?
I think, well, maybe they would be running. That's the thing, though. I don't think either of them want this fight to go the distance.
No,
I think both of them want that quick knockout.
Do that knockout.
So that's why I don't think they're focusing too much on cardio. I think they're focusing just more on the skill,
yeah,
more on the power, you know, more maintaining that strength.
As long as neither of them have a fucking heart attack.
Like, yeah, basically just maintain that, what's it called? Anaerobic endurance.
Yeah.
So that's what I think would be the overall goal. Hey, man, look, it's going to be great. I mean, I'm going to be excited. We're both going to be watching it. And it's going to be a huge, huge day for boxing in general, and yeah, huge, huge day for the fight game. But I guess we'll just have to wait and see.
We have to wait and see. Do you want to sign us out?
Yeah, sign us out. All right.
All right. If you guys want to look at our social media, you can find us at The Last Set Podcast on Facebook. On Instagram, it should be at The Last Set Podcast. Twitter, _ The Last Set. YouTube, The Last Set. Everything. Our best way to reach us is most likely Instagram. Click on our link in our bio and it will give you all of our information on YouTube. We also have in our description all our respective links. So thank you guys for listening.
Yeah, anything thanks again, guys, and we'll hear from you soon. Right. We're back in full swing. Jack's back to health now, so
I'm recovering a lot better from the joke Corona.
So the Joe Rona.
The Joe Rona, yeah. Yeah. Next time, don't come to the set unwell, okay?
Okay, yeah, we'll maintain a little bit of distance.
We're maintaining a bit of distance, and we're also maintaining our health a lot better.
Alrighty, let's keep this pace going, my man. Cool. Alright, thanks again, guys. See Take care.
Peace.